if at least one person comments on the fact that, hey, nice intro, we will keep it. Otherwise, we'll go.
Okay. Deal.
No animals were harmed in the making of this podcast.
Except Chirag. Or I can give you... Except Chirag. Except Chirag. Except Chirag. Except Chirag. Except... I love how you're just patiently sitting over there and entertaining my nonsense. Also, you don't have a choice, but yeah.
Hi, Hazel. How's it going?
What?
You're pretending like I never say hi to you.
After 3 hours of conversation, it's just weird to just restart.
But for our listeners, they don't know that we've been talking for 3 hours.
Let's tell them what we've been talking about.
No, that's okay.
Please, a little hinty hint.
Go for it.
No, you should, because we've been talking about you.
No, but I'm not... I don't have any hinty hints, whatever those are.
It's okay. I won't embarrass you in
public. No, embarrass me away. I mean, after all, you know, except me, no animals are harmed here. Ever since I've suggested that to you, the only thing you've said is, I don't want to say it because it sounds like I'm a mean person who harms you. And then ever since we started recording, like, there's been nothing but harm to poor old me.
That's not true. I do that to you every time.
Exactly, which is why I don't understand why you have an objection to recording that.
Because it's not harming you, it's my love.
Love can harm.
Oh, yeah, so that's the hinty hint. That's what we've been speaking about the last 3 hours. Chirag's love life.
Are you happy now?
Excited.
Very cool. Recently, there was a little list put out by an online portal called livehealthy.ee. Where they made a roundup of the top 11 podcasts that contribute towards a healthy body mind. But I think they went as far as also like things like sustainability. Yours truly, i.e. the Two Vegans, made it to the list, which was kind of cool. From my FM as well, we had two other shows that made it to the list. So we were 3 out of the 11, which was very, very cool.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Anne, for adding our podcast on your list. I think this is our first feature on a publication. So yay. And she also mentions that she didn't get the name of my store. So I'd just like to put that out again for everyone. It's Spuburgo. S-P-U-B-B-E-R-C-O.
Spuburgo.
Spuburgo.
Like from Spud and Bubbles and other cats that you've...
Yeah. Anyway, we're not going to talk about my store. But yeah. So thank you so much, Anne, for featuring us and a couple of other podcasts from Chirag's production. Good stuff.
Yeah, it's a nice start to our episode 21.
I mean, I have to give it to you. You remember this every time.
No, I just check before we start.
Okay.
So, Hekel, what are we going to talk about today?
We're going to talk about cognitive dissonance.
Now, this is a topic, by the way, that like you've put on our list for a little while now. We've kind of been waiting to like do it. And I think for some reason, we've decided that the summer while everybody's away is when we want them to reflect on this.
While sipping their margaritas on a beach and like, uh-oh.
But yeah, I mean, it's not a bad time to sort of reflect and talk about it. But let's get into it. Like, why are we talking about this?
Okay. So let's start with the definition of cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance refers to a situation involving conflicting attitudes, beliefs, or behaviors. So this produces a feeling of mental discomfort leading to an alteration in one of the attitudes, beliefs, or behaviors to reduce the discomfort and restore balance. So this was the definition, okay? And I'll tell you why I have been wanting to cover this. A little more than a couple of months ago, I was holidaying at the Andaman beach. The best part about that holiday was there was no internet. There was no network on my phone. So I had a lot of time to think and just enjoy nature around me. And it was a dive holiday. So we were at this shack right by the beach. And that place is really, really close to nature. So, you know, we're just like walking barefoot in the beach, you know, reading books on the hammock and things like that. I was walking around at the shack and they had a little restaurant over there, very, very cute restaurant. So they had a pathway that would lead to the rooms. On either sides of the pathway was this wild bush and just wild grass, right? Not mown, not cut, not looking pretty. It's just wild and it was just growing from every way. And they had these little signboards saying that, you know, cutting or mowing grass is not good for nature and they should just be allowed to grow and something on those lines. I can't remember the exact words. And then a little ahead when that pathway leads to your rooms and a little ahead is the beach. And at the beach, they also have, again, signs that say don't pick up shells because there are sand creatures who build their homes in those shells. So, you know, just for your sake of 5 minutes of fun, don't do that. So I thought that, you know, these were things that I didn't even know. Like, I would just pick up a shell and just play with it, or just look, oh, how pretty it is, and put it back. But I didn't know that, you know, and that was really good of them to actually educate people. And then I went to the restaurant, and then they were serving seafood and meat. And it just hit me that, like, a resort or a hotel that was actually going out there and making an effort to educate people about these things has not thought about how much damage we do, or rather we're just killing, right? We're killing animals for our 5 minutes of pleasure, right? So that disconnect is what is called cognitive dissonance. And that is what struck me to do an episode about it.
And I mean, this is something, by the way, like, to relate it back to, because we run into this conversation a lot, and I know we've mentioned it before, about meeting people who are, and I say quote-unquote in the nicest way possible, but quote-unquote animal lovers. But it's a weird thing because it's a separate definition, where animal lover means I love dogs, cats, horses. That's as far as we go. But then that doesn't apply to cows and lambs and chickens. So I think that is something that we've run into this a lot.
I think people who eat animals actually have convinced themselves that there are animals to pet and then there are animals to eat, not realizing that the only thing that kind of brings all of us animals, human or non-human, together is sentience. Right? It's our fear in front of death. It's the pain that we feel. You know, when your cat or your dog is in pain, they let you know in some way or the other. Humans talk. They either bark or they meow or whatever, but they let you know. They stop eating. It's the same with cows and sheep and goats, but they refuse to see that. And somewhere commercialization has kind of blinded them, because you know that cats and dogs are pets. More people go out there seeking pets as cats and dogs. Like over here, I'd never go out in the market looking for a pet and asking for a cow, you know, unless I'm like in a sanctuary and I'm quite aware that I do want a pet cow. But even the upkeep of that is difficult, right?
It's also the farming angle to them.
Of course.
It's just the way we've grown up, and our grandparents have grown up even, like, to see that these are farm animals, or animals that grow on a farm versus, let's say, something that is inside the house. This is one. Two, like, so take for example, we have an extremely, extremely large dog shelter in the country. And I have seen over and over again people I follow either on social media or who have visited this rescue center, right? And it is a rescue center where some animals were in very tough conditions. And what the rescue center does, and I'm hoping maybe one day we can do like an all-field visit there. What they do is they invite people to come volunteer. They invite people to come spend time with the animals there. Even if you can't actually take one home and foster, or take one home and adopt, or whatever, which is the ideal outcome, they do invite people to come by. They hold, as I understand, they hold these dog walks. You can then take these dogs for a walk and stuff, and allow them to just enjoy the you know, some human company and enjoy that, and just be part of something slightly larger. And I'm seeing these posts that how broken they feel when they see the state of the animals, how upset they are when they see that the, you know, some dogs, unfortunately, you know, they've come there after being in houses that have abused them, or just left them or discarded them, or whatever be the conditions, all of which, of course, is extremely sad. Yeah, you see Instagram stories full of text about, like, oh my God, this is ridiculous, and begging, like, people, please come and, like, be part of it. Come, let's take these dogs for a walk. Even if you can't foster somebody, at least be part of it. Then next week rolls around and they're out somewhere and having lunch, and they're like, oh my God, this was like the best steak I've ever had. This is such a big contrast that it's not even a question. This is not to say that I also know people who are aware of that cognitive dissonance and either are trying to manage it, to be like, no, I know that what I'm doing, but I can't yet give it up, or I have some compelling reasons why this has not been taken out of my diet entirely, so I'm trying to reduce it or whatever. You know, they're taking some steps in that direction. That's all of that is fine. So I'm not talking about that, but I'm talking about those where it's such a big divide. And this is, I think, it's something that I think I've noticed a lot more in the last couple of years, and more so, of course, since we've been doing the show. that cognitive dissonance is not only just real, but it's like I almost want to facepalm and be like, how do you not see this?
And I think a classic case and example over here would be the Yulin Dog Festival, right? And this is something worldwide that has angered people, and you know, you see all over the internet people are really, really angry at certain countries for eating dog meat. And the other day, I'm a part of this animal welfare Facebook page where, or rather a cat rescue Facebook page where somebody posted an article about cat meat and certain countries eating cat meat. And I literally commented saying, what's the big deal? You can't be saying that while you're munching on a hamburger, right? I mean, culturally, cows are food for you. Culturally, cats are food for them, or dogs are food for them. It's a cultural thing. It's not like they're jerks and they've decided that they want to eat dogs. And somebody argued with me saying that, but they're pets. And I'm like, yes, for you, they are pets. For you, cows are food and dogs are pets. For them, dogs are pets and dogs are food. You can't decide what categorization is correct because it's their culture.
Actually, I mean, we would argue personally that all of that categorization is just wrong anyway. But once you're in that zone where you're making distinctions that are, if you really think about it, arbitrary.
Exactly.
You can't be then commenting on someone else's classification.
And I was trying to explain to them this meat paradox, right? I'm just trying to tell them that what you think is meat does not necessarily is the same case with someone else from a different culture. In fact, I reckon farming a dog or a cat would be far more sustainable for the environment than a cow. And I made that point. And I'm like, I don't see what the big deal is unless you have a problem with eating cows and dogs. And they got offended. And at the end of the day, she was like, oh, but it is my choice. And I'm like, well, exactly.
Yeah. And why isn't it the other person's choice?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, and then she just obviously stormed out of the Facebook conversation and didn't hear from her again. But I'm not saying that because we're vegans, we are so amazing. We've got it all figured out. We're constantly contributing to a lot of cruelty somewhere. Somebody has to somewhere die to feed us, even if it is bees or, you know, somewhere along the food chain, we would be killing a lot of insects as well. But the point is that when I was a vegetarian and I was happily drinking milk and eating cheese, I didn't know about all of this. But when somebody told me this and when social media suddenly burst out and was like, okay, this is what you're consuming, you know, and then it took me a couple of years before I could actually phase that food out of my diet. But then I knew that I was being a jerk. I knew it, you know, and I was ashamed of it. But I was addicted to the food that I was eating. I understand that bit. I don't agree and I feel ashamed still. But when you tell somebody and they're just like, no, but the cow is food. Cow is food. And I'm just like, no, my friend, it is not. Like, and when you ask them, how do you think a cow is different than a dog? And they're just like, but cow is food. Cow is food. And I'm like, stop. Just get out of it. Just get out of what you've been socialized into thinking or what you've just been told all your life. Just step out of that.
It is very hard. Same thing is true for plastic. So you have everybody making these like massive proclamation. And for the record, I'm glad that everybody's thinking about plastic. And I'm glad that everybody is aware, thanks to, of course, to a number of FNB outlets and other campaigns that have been run over the last couple of years. And we've seen this sort of explosion in Dubai where, at least on the straw level, now a lot of companies are, in fact, we've reached that point of public pressure that a lot of companies are phasing out straws just because it's starting to look really bad that they have them, right? So that's wonderful. And I'm glad that, you know, and you have companies even like Starbucks and so on that are doing these things at a global level. Great. But then you have these people who are like, oh my God, like I will refuse to take a straw because of this and this and this and this and this. Oh my God, look, did you try that prawn fettuccine the other day? It was so delicious. And again, we're back. I know it's a very similar thing, but for me, the plastic one is so strong because I've seen some very, very passionately strong conversations around the fact that, you know, a turtle came up with plastic, or there was a blue whale that, again, animals that they did not eat having plastic offending them while they couldn't give a shit about the fish that are
the
also
tuna and the salmon.
3 or 4 weeks ago, there was an article, I'll put a link in the show notes, that the, like a study was done that said that on a weekly basis, you're eating as much plastic as a credit card. And by the way, like you're talking about the turtle and the plastic and all that, but you're eating the fish that is also consuming the same plastic. And the outrage isn't there. This is about the outrage. Like the outrage over the turtle and the whale is so high, But the outrage over the hamur, for example. So hamur is a fish that is very popular here. It's on almost every restaurant's menu, if I'm not wrong. And the problem with hamur, again, is that the way they're farmed, or they're fished, is extremely unsustainable. So the hamur population in total has been declining over the last few years. And this is a big problem. And there's a lot of like ecological studies that are showing how this is harming the environment. But we won't give up the hamur. I mean, it's still this tradition that every restaurant is carrying. And why is that not an issue? We get so upset when we hear about the rhino and the tiger being extinct. But then so are we've got hamur that are on the verge of extinction. We're farming salmon now because naturally occurring salmon are not enough to sustain our salmon demands. Okay, we'll have a conversation about why you're eating salmon separately. But the fact that the rate at which we're pulling salmon out of the sea is so high that salmon can't sustain themselves. So the solution is not, let's cut down on salmon. The solution is like, okay, well, let's just grow them in like a artificial situation so that people don't have to feel that salmon is outrage. And my take would be, well, you know what? Maybe if you stop and people don't see it on the menu and people are forced to ask, and your answer then correctly to educate them is, hey, you know what? Actually, the salmon's extinct or on the verge of extinction, and we have to protect them, so we can't serve it to you anymore, will probably at least spark the conversation in 5 people rather than this thing where we're like, yeah, salmon is also going extinct. Well, there's a salmon farm here, and you know we're getting it from there. And so nobody's having the conversation.
I mean, this is obviously a very, very psychological subject that we're talking about, and we're no experts. But you kind of like want to think, get into the minds of those people who portray cognitive dissonance. And it's not just about veganism. Yeah, you could do it anywhere. You could be like, oh my God, I need exercise. I need exercise. I'm overweight. I know that I do need to work out, lose weight. But in my head, I've convinced myself that I have no time. You know, it could be in any situation in your life. But you're just trying to understand why this happens. And there was a research that was conducted in 2012 that revealed that meat eaters reject the idea that animals used for human consumption have minds, supporting the dissonance theory. So let's look at the kind of animals that mostly people around the world eat, especially in Western countries, and they think they're okay. And I've seen several times on social media, people are like, yeah, but this animal is dumb. It's stupid. It doesn't even
know.
Turkey is a big one. Even the fish don't feel pain, right? So you're pulling out, and people think that there are certain animals like whales and shark that have a contribution to the ecosystem, whereas fish like salmon or tuna do not have any contribution. Therefore, if they don't exist, it doesn't matter.
Do you know, I think it's not even 2-week-old story that some guy was trying to, they were out in the water and I think a shark came up or whatever and he tried to capture it. It resulted in the shark turning extremely violent and killing the man. And it was being shared on social media. There were people cheering it, saying, well, serves the man right for trying to impact the home of the shark. He deserved what was coming to him by people who I already know are meat eaters.
Exactly.
But outside of just that, it's like you said, why is it okay for a shark but not for
a smaller
fish? Yeah.
Yeah. So point number one is that smaller fish still makes its contribution. It's the food for the shark to make a bigger contribution. You don't get to decide as humans who is enough for the ecosystem. And there would be so much other things that the fish would do underwater that we don't know about, right? There are coral reefs. There's just so much life out there. Everyone has a particular role in the ecosystem, right? Besides us who are just going around destructing shit. But like, even if you look at us, right, as vegans, if I'm strolling by the beach, if I see a shark or a whale, I'll immediately do something about, let's get it back inside the ocean. But if I see a small fish outside, I'll just be like, oh, well, it's dead. What can you do? You're not going to pick it up and, you know, or you may, but you know, the difference in the weight of loss that I would feel if a shark dies versus the weight of loss that I would feel if a small tuna fish dies.
Yeah, I think at least for fish especially, like I think they're like the equivalent of insects to people,
yes.
Right? Like,
yeah.
It's like they're there, I'm sure they serve some kind of purpose, but I couldn't care less if they died. Like, I mean, you know,
exactly.
you see a swarm of ants or you accidentally like step on them or intentionally in some cases step on them and affect them. You're like, oh, whatever, you know, 5 of the ants will take their place. But like, Yeah, but you did get rid of five. Like, but the conversation is, there's five others will take their place, and you don't think that about a cat. We try and save everyone. Yeah, and like you said, for small fish, same way. I think they. I don't know why, but we liken them to insects.
But it's commercialization again. It's social conditioning. Small fish is meant to be eaten. Small fish, there are multiple small fish. They're in people's aquariums, so they're just available everywhere. That goldfish in a bowl, it's just, we don't think beyond that. It pisses me off when I see goldfish in a bowl. Like, oh, they don't have memory, but you're torturing them. You're fucking torturing them. Just taking circles in that little bowl. It's not right. One aspect you've taken from that goldfish's personality, which is short-term memory, and you've just decided what its life has to be. You don't know what else that goldfish is capable of doing, you know, naturally.
Can you imagine how offended we would be if someone learned that someone was keeping an Alzheimer's patient like that? Well, and here's the thing, right? Like, so goldfish are known to have higher oxygen needs, and they also produce a lot of waste. So from an ecosystem perspective, you know, this waste goes back to contributing to the soil and to the plants underwater and everything else. But because of it, actually, they need an extremely like high volume filtered water to be able to survive, because they have much higher oxygen needs. So obviously, just by the fact that they're putting them in a bowl is already contrary to them being able to live properly. There are scientific studies that show that goldfish that are grown in aquariums, goldfish that are grown in bowls, and any small location or any small sized sort of situation or mini aquariums or whatever, are generally, they're found to be stunted, have diseases, and they die prematurely. And so whether we talk about what their contribution is to the ecosystem, for me, that's a little bit, I mean, we'll talk about it, and that's a secondary point. But the fact is that you are actually putting a fish through an almost torturous environment. Can you imagine? Like, it's like putting someone in your basement.
Not even the basement, like a prison cell, 4x4 prison cell, where you can just circle around it and do nothing else.
Yeah, and that air quality is terrible.
Yeah, I mean, They're also known to feed on mosquitoes in freshwater. They're freshwater fish, but they're known to like kind of eat those insects that breed over there.
I also wanted to allude to another point, because we were talking about this, you know, we were talking about everybody having a part in the ecosystem, and we brought this up a few episodes ago, that what I don't understand, and by the way, I went through this myself. We studied this crap in school, and I remember having science exam questions. The context would be a tiger eats a deer. What would happen now if a deer went extinct? And you would do this whole like roughly repeated conversation of how deer going extinct would mean the tiger would not have any food, and the tiger would. I mean, of course, it's a very idealistic condition, because tiger eats more than deer. But you know, then tiger would not have food. So the tiger first they would. You know, they would start to, the population would start to dwindle and stuff, and it would have an impact on the ecosystem, or vice versa, where like suddenly, like say, due to some change in regulations or how some of the sanctuaries, let's say, are being maintained, now the deer are being protected. And so now instead of dying, they're overpopulating, right? And what would happen if they overpopulate? Well,
we'll kill them.
You know, well, there's... But, you know, and so how the adverse impacts it has on the ecosystem. So we learned this. But you see, again, we learned it for deers and tigers. And yes, I know some countries eat them, but on average, they don't. We didn't really do those conversations for cows and lambs and sheep and chickens. Kind of, maybe I've answered that, but that might be why we had that dissonance for a while until more recently where we started examining it. But it amazes me that we are educating kids worldwide, I think, about the fact that killing an animal or killing a certain one set of animals more excessively than the others has an adverse impact on the ecosystem. And yet, we don't seem to make the connection when it comes to actually having a conversation about it.
So however little and unimportant you think certain animals are, they do have a role that they're there to fulfill. Of course, we've bred a few animals over time and kind of genetically interfered with how they perform their roles, but it's still not right. I mean, forget all the science woo-woo, right? Just forget all...
Did you say woo-woo?
Yeah.
Woo-woo.
Yeah.
Where does it come from?
Do you have a problem? I don't know. It's just like... Forget all these scientific facts that we are throwing right now, but it's just wrong to keep a living being in a bowl. You don't need science to tell you that. It's just common sense. Oh, wait.
No, it's not. Yeah, and this is the thing. And this is where cognitive dissonance comes in. That you, people you would expect who will openly have conversations about rights and cruelty and everything else under the sun, are just blinded in certain situations. And we talked about the smaller fish. We've talked about certain animals that are just known for meat. I mean, look at the amount of outrage that happens in the U.S. when they discover that horse meat is used and was used for a long time until, you know, it got exposed in hamburgers. Again, I don't think we need to open this rhetorical question of like who decided that, because there's a slippery slope there. But like, so horse meat has been there. So there's a lot of outrage about the fact that any facility, anything in the U.S. that does anything to do with horse meat, including the industry that races horses, and therefore eventually when they die, like what do? You slaughter them, or when they're incapable, slaughter them and pass them off as meat, which is why there's this sort of black market industry there. But all of this outrage around that, you know, and it's like you're strolling past a slaughterhouse to complain about the horses.
And that's the thing, right? I mean, kangaroo meat in Australia, for example. Oh, the kangaroos are breeding, so we decided we want to kill them and maintain their, you know, population in the ecosystem. No, you don't have to. You haven't created them, so you don't get to decide how much is too much. It's too much for you because you have burst over the seams with your population, and so you're just doing what is convenient for you. It doesn't necessarily mean that it is ecologically required.
No, and we've seen in multiple cases nature is built for this.
Exactly.
Right? There's always this correction that happens. You made a point earlier, and I think we have overpopulated. So when you say, you know, like every animal, everybody, every species has some role in the ecosystem, well, except for humans. It's not that humans don't have one. It's just that we have reached a point where we cannot have one anymore because we are overpopulated. You remember this meme or whatever comic strip that was like, you know, like thousands of years ago, everything was green grass all around, and then you know humans would build a fence and live inside that little round. And then after a while, they were like, well, okay, we got to expand it. So those got bigger and bigger. And then you see like the earth being divided into half. And then, you know, all the animals are on that side and we're on this side. And now it's the exact opposite, where our fence is the same size fence, but now we're on the outside and all the animals are on the inside, right? Like that's what we've brought it down to. We've taken over. We do not have resources and capabilities to manage that. I mean, look at all the crises we have right now all around the world, whether you look at whether it's poverty to refugees to everything. Unfair, say, wealth distribution and stuff also creates some of these issues. But again, we're back to the same thing. Like we have this thing where now we're so all over the place that we have to be like, okay, well, now we're all fighting for money and we're fighting each other. We have countries today that are rationing water because we just don't have enough.
We're not far away from selling air for money. And you've seen those movies, right? How
this dystopia where like...
Yeah, like people are wearing these masks and now, you know, you're buying these masks and these containers that are at your back, just giving you air. Oh, jeez. This has depressed me.
I want to talk about a second aspect of cognitive dissonance where it's kind of in the middle. So it's a little better than total dissonance, but there's still a conflict to deal with. And I think this is something we experience. One of the struggles I keep having personally is that there are times when I'm right in front of my eyes, I'm very aware of the fact that I'm about to do something that I know is going to have a negative impact. And I'm not just talking about straws and plastic bags, because again, not that those are not having an impact, but that's a different conversation. We've had that and everybody has that because we all know about it. But you know, something as simple as like just the fact that I drive my car every day, and it's a petrol car and not an electric one, and I'm not in a position to get an electric one today, or at least it's not easy enough, and all of that. We are doing things on a daily basis that are still, you know, we'll make the argument that like, well, we're not eating meat and we don't buy leather and we're not contributing directly to some of these industries. But indirectly, of course we are, right? I mean, sadly, even our eco-friendly or environment-friendly cleaners are coming in plastic containers to us. It's still a process and we're still like quite far away from that. And I think that there's still that struggle sometimes where you're looking to pick up something. I mean, we've had this happen where we were passing by a store and you said, oh, I need to pick up something. And we go and we stare at this aisle and we look at this like, oh, this one looks environment-friendly. It says it's cruelty-free. And then you're holding a plastic container. Okay, so now what? Like, what? Have I done one step better? Of course that I've picked up a cruelty-free product, but we're still dealing with so much conflict in terms of what we're doing.
Yeah. I mean, just mobile phones and laptops, right? Where is the stuff coming from?
And it's worse now because we live in this use and throw away culture. I mean, I've seen my grandparents and stuff do this, right? Like where something would happen and my grandfather would walk in, bring out his toolbox and start like screwing something in, taking something out and doing stuff and get absolutely infuriated when a repair person would come and say, oh, this is broken, you can't use it anymore. And I've actually seen my granddad like be like, actually yell the guy out of the house. And then he's like, whatever, tomorrow morning when I step out, I'm going to walk up to the whatever relevant store in this particular example and pick up this part and I'm going to try it myself. Everything was reused and retaped and redone and redone and redone. And today it's like, hey, you know, my phone's a little slow. Okay, cool. I'm going to buy a new one. Apple put out like a series of these knowledge-based articles and stuff to say, hey, if your phone is slow or if something specific is there, can you please try these steps first? Or come to us and we'll see if we can fix it by either replacing the battery or doing something. There are guides now, by the way, and I can link to some of these, or if people want to talk more about it, they can reach out to us, where there are guides to say how to extend the life of your phone. Like we're coming back now to this conversation. Apple runs a lab, which is, they have this robot called Daisy, which is, whose entire job is to take apart the parts of old iPhones and resort them.
Yeah, but there are companies taking advantage of that as well, right? I mean, the spare parts or the fridge that you would have had in your grandparents' house would have lasted, what, 20 years or something. But a fridge today would probably last you 5 years at the very best. And then you'd just be, and it wouldn't work, right? So again, commercialization, Apple and Samsung taking advantage and building flimsier phones than they were earlier. It's just wrong on every aspect. Like I try my best to cut down on plastic. It's obviously it's not 100%. It's probably 20% better than what I used to be. But I'm still learning and I'm still trying my best. But again, if like today you were at the store and you're like, what can I get you? And I'm like, get me a pack of chips, even though I knew it has palm oil in it, even though I knew that would be like an extra piece of plastic in the environment. But I was greedy, right? And there is no other excuse. There's no other reason for it. I could have just eaten something at home. I wasn't even hungry. I was just greedy.
I am stunned, and I mean it really. Like, I am stunned at where plastic comes out from sometimes. I recently had to, thanks to a move and everything else, like, landed up shipping my electric shaver, right? And so I went out to get a new one. And I refused the plastic bag. And so I carried the box out of the store, and I unpacked this thing. And so it was in a, what I assume is some kind of a paper box, which I opened. And someone had put a plastic tape thing around it that was sealed. So I had to cut through that. And I was like, okay, well, a small piece of plastic, fine. Opened it, pulled the thing out, and they covered it with plastic. So I lifted the plastic, whatever, lid kind of thing out of the thing. And I'm like, this sucks. Every individual part was wrapped in plastic, yeah. Right? And it's just, and in that moment, I remember, because this just happened last week, like in that moment, I'm sitting there removing plastic. And I'm like, why did we feel the need to do this? Like, what were we protecting? It came in a case.
Yeah, and multiply that by like 8 billion people.
Exactly. I mean, I still have this thing today where if you go to a grocery and you go to their, not live food counter is not the right word, but you go to their food counters where stuff is in a container and you ask for, let's say, I want some hummus or I want some salad, and they pack it for you. I mean, they pack it in these very plastic, no doubt, but they pack it in these fairly sturdy containers and then they label it. And then they wrap it up in plastic again.
Yeah.
And I have to yell across the counter and be like, hey, please don't wrap it. I don't need it wrapped in plastic. This will seal it until I get it home. The rolls and rolls of plastic that go out just in that food aisle alone.
So I ordered and I choose the option of give me my items as loose as possible. I like to give them the box back so they can reuse it. And the bananas came cling wrapped. They're bananas.
Nature has given them this seal.
I get it. They could be squishy, but I have to keep them outside for 3 days. That's not even the point here. The point is you've kept peaches and oranges open, but you decided that a banana will get squished. And so you wrapped it in plastic. I don't get it.
No, and the same companies and the same people are fighting for straws.
Yeah. Straws will kill fish. Please don't use straws. Oh, want to go for sushi tonight? Okay. Have you noticed how the short form of cognitive dissonance is CD?
I can't tell if this was a compliment or an insult at the moment.
I meant it as a compliment, but when I heard it, I was like, oh no, this is not a compliment, this is an insult. Anyway.
I think we've spoken a lot.
Yeah, it was a heavy topic. But I'm hoping that we could give you an insight on what exactly is cognitive dissonance, we don't mean to point fingers or say one is better than the other, but we humbly and genuinely request you to think beyond what you've learned to think.
And that's the reason why we also spoke about the fact that, by the way, we are also dealing with some of it. We've seen vegans and vegetarians and very, very aware people also deal with it. We want everybody to try and do whatever they can in their circles about it. And tell us about when you broke your cognitive dissonance barriers.
Or tell us about how you're finding it difficult, and maybe we can try and help you if we've got it sorted ourselves.
or we'll put it out to the community, and maybe someone in the community has sorted it out or has figured out an alternative that could be useful for you.
Awesome sauce.
All right. Well, until next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.